My name's Taylor. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Taylor. We love them.
So first, I just wanted to start off by saying thank you, everyone, for coming. And I also wanted to say, like, I was thinking about it a lot during that meeting, hearing Teresa speak. Obviously, she had her life before Alcoholics Anonymous was far worse than mine. But I believe, like, 100%, everything that I did prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, everything that I did, I surely, like, don't deserve. My actions show that I do not deserve, like, what I have today. I have an incredible life. So I just want to get, like, right into the problem. The problem for me was lack of power. And when I work with sponsees and I tell my story to people, I start as far back as I can remember, and it's about 5-6 years old, going to kindergarten. First couple weeks, I'm like, I'm totally fine. Everything's great. I'm having a great time. I'm happy, joyous, and free. And like 2 weeks into kindergarten, some kids start like making fun of me, and all of a sudden, like something switched inside of me where I started to believe like what these people were saying was actually true about me. It was literally like a switch went off of me, and all of a sudden I was very conscious of the dialogue in my head that told me that what they're saying is true, and I believed it. And that went on from the age of like 5 to 12, and I say 12 because that's the first time I ever took a drink, or in my case it was drugs. My friend had invited me to go to the movie theater with him, and I had done that before, and I hated it because there were like cliques of young kids, and they're all talking, having a great time, and it was whatever, and I never felt like I really fit in. And on this particular night, my buddy was like, "Do you want to take this?" It was a little pill, and I said, "Yeah." I didn't really know what it was, but he assured me that it would, like, I was gonna have a good time. So I later found out that it was Adderall, and like, we were like halfway to the movie theater that night, and again, like a switch like came off in me, and all of a sudden I was like really happy to like be where I was and be doing what I was doing, and I was really just excited to go talk to people and just be a part of. And for the first time since I was 5 years old, I can remember being just very free, very, very happy, uninhibited. Hello. So that was my first experience with gaining a power. I'd had it at 5 years old without even realizing it. It was stripped away from me. 5 to 12, I was a crazy kid. And then at 12, just with one pill, just like that, I was given all this power again. It really didn't last too long for me. Yeah, I had a couple of good times out there. It wasn't anything great. But it went from, the first rehab I went to was, I was 16 years old. I was already getting into a whole bunch of trouble. My mother decided it was a good idea for me to go. I fought it tooth and nail the whole way. And all I really gained from that first rehab that I went to was I learned about all these other drugs that I could go try. And I was like hell-bent on trying everything. Another important part of my story, I thought, was so like when I went into this rehab, these kids were like, they were bad. They were bad kids. A lot of them had trouble with the law. They would ask me, when I first got there, like, what was your drug of choice? And I was like, oh, weed, drinking. And they would like laugh at me. They thought it was silly that I was there for that. And I kind of thought so too. And by the end of my stay, there was a 28-day program. I was telling people that I was like shooting crack cocaine like into my hands. That just kind of goes to show you like how I am when I'm not drinking. That's really like where the problem is. I'm insecure. I'm afraid. I can't talk to anybody. I can't look at anybody. I have to start making up stories to get people to get their approval, to get people to like me. I don't think that's like a normal thing for anybody to do. And really all I was trying to do the whole time is gain some sort of power just to feel okay. So jump ahead a few years. It continued to get worse after that first rehab. Another thing that happened too is after that rehab, my mom was living in South Florida at the time, and I'm from Florida, so that was like, you know, 4 hours away from where I grew up. I did not know a single soul there. And this was the first time looking back that I can remember being like really untreated, like really crazy. My mom was monitoring my every move damn near, and she was drug testing me. I couldn't get away with shit. I couldn't do anything. And, it was literally like hell on earth. I had no relief like whatsoever. I can remember, one day she like left me home alone, and I had heard of people like robo tripping. And, I couldn't find any Robitussin, so all I could find was NyQuil, and I drank the entire bottle, and I just slept really hard for, like, a day. I was trying to get some sort of relief. I also remember, like, being at this school, and again, I was terrified. I couldn't look at anybody, couldn't talk to anybody, I couldn't do anything. And, it was so bad that I would, like, eat lunch, like, in the library because I was too like afraid for anyone to like look at me and think that they could come over and talk to me. And I gave off that feeling too. Like if someone looked at me, I gave them that look like, don't you dare come over here and talk to me. I don't want anything to do with you. And then something really interesting happened. I realized that my mom wasn't testing me for alcohol. So I made up this really bogus like fake ID, and there was this like drive-through liquor store that I went to, and I showed this guy my fake ID, and he was like, "Ah, it's fake." And I was like, "If you sell to me, I'll be back here every day. Like I swear to God, I will." And from that day on, it went on for about 2 years. I drank almost every single day, and the interesting part about it is I would drink a couple of, like malt beverages before school. Like I think they were called Sparks or something. And within weeks I had like a whole shitload of friends. I had like a following, like people liked me, and I was able to interact with the world and with kids my age, and it just all made sense. That's the type of shit that alcohol did for me. It allowed me to be like you, or how I saw you. It allowed me to feel okay. It got really bad. The 2 days after I turned 18, I was like supplying alcohol for a bunch of underage kids, and we were at a beach, and the police showed up, and lucky for me, I never got arrested. And the only reason for that being is my dad is a U.S. Marshal, and I would just name drop him constantly. There were many times I got pulled over drunk, and they would just drive me home or follow me home, and nothing ever came of it. But I probably should have spent some time in jail. So between the ages of like 18 and 19, I moved back and forth. I tried the whole geographic thing. I tried getting away from the wrong people. I tried getting girlfriends. My dad used to always say like, you need to get a girl, she'll fix you and all this shit. And I tried everything under the sun to like make my drinking and using work. And, it simply just stopped working. And, One day my mom, she had known that I'd been using, some prescription drugs, and she gave me an ultimatum that I either stop or she was gonna kick me out. And at that time I cared enough that I didn't want to get kicked out of the house. I didn't want to like, live on the streets, and I 100% wanted to get my shit together. And, I told her, I promised her like if I started using again, I would come tell her and I would get help. And I meant it with every fiber of my being that I was going to stay sober, and it didn't even last 12 hours. Like later that night, I was calling my guy, and that was it. And I stayed true to my promise, and I told my mom, and she got me into this place. Doesn't really matter where it was, but I meant it. Like I really wanted to be sober at 18 years old. I really did. And went to this place. It was like 3 months. I was sent out here to go to a halfway house, New Freedom after that. And, they meant business. Like you went to 3 meetings a day if you didn't have a job. And in between going to meetings, you, you looked for a job, and when you weren't doing those two things, you were working out of the book, you were working with a sponsor, and by this time, I hadn't taken advantage of, like, the window of opportunity that I was given, like, that I believe that everyone has, and I think it changes for some people. It could be hours, days, or maybe a week, but there's a window of opportunity where you can take action, and I missed that window when I was 18, and I remember talking to my house manager one night, and it was like 11 at night, and it was February, and there was snow on the ground, and I was like, dude, I don't think I'm alcoholic. And he talked to me, and he explained to me, like, what it meant to be alcoholic, and he asked me at the end of the conversation if I believed that I was, and I was like, no, and he was like, well, get the fuck out. And he kicked me out on the street, and at the time, it was like the worst thing that ever happened to me, but looking back on it today, it helped me out tremendously, and also what helped me out a lot is my folks didn't help me at all. Somehow I made it all the way back to Florida, and I was living out of my vehicle, couch surfing every once in a while, stealing from the people that would let me sleep on their couches. I couldn't hold down a job. Every job that I had, I would get fired either for not showing up or for simply just like exploding on my boss or whatever. So what happened was, that lasted like 6-7 months, and I had like this little twinkling of an idea that like I didn't have to do this. When I was at New Freedom that first time, I had like the idea. I saw people like getting it, and I just didn't think that it was going to work for me. And plain and simple, I just wanted to get high. Like I didn't have a solution. I wasn't willing to find the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only solution that I knew of was what had worked before, and that's what I went out and sought. And it worked barely, but I knew almost immediately. Once I started drinking again, that I was most definitely an alcoholic. Teresa was saying in that meeting that like coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, they like implant the seed into you, and it ruins your drinking forever. It's 100% true. It's one of the most miserable places to be on this earth. So what happened was I got this idea that maybe I could do it, and I called some people that I had connections with that were back here. And all of them were like thrilled to hear from me, and I didn't leave on best of terms, and so that was surprising to me that like people wanted to hear from me. They were happy to hear from me. The owner of the place that I went to gave me a few instructions. He told me to, well, call my folks first, tell them that I wanted help, call Intergroup, ask them to help me, get someone to tag along with me for 3 days, and if I can make it 3 days out there, by doing those things, then he would take me in. So that's exactly what I did. I called my pop, and I'll never forget, like, it's like he was expecting the call, because I called him at like 4:30 in the morning, and he answered, and all I said was, I want help, and he just told me to come over. And I remember like pulling into the driveway, and he was like waiting like outside of the door, and we just like hugged and cried for a while, and I had like this feeling that everything was going to be okay, and I truly believed it, and I immediately started to like do the suggestions that that the owner had asked me to do. And I met this person at a meeting I had never been to before. He let me tag along with him and these other like two young people. It's amazing looking back on it now. Like, this town has such a huge like young people fellowship. It's incredible. In the meeting that I went to, there was like one young guy, and then I tagged along with him, and he took me to like two other young guys, and all we did was like sit at coffee shops for like 3 days long, and he took me through the book. We read that book like cover to cover, and we just talked about it, and it started to make sense to me. It started to seem like I could actually do it. So I got out here, and I took advantage of that window of opportunity that I was given, and I haven't done this thing perfectly either. Like, I've slacked a whole bunch in the 5 years that I've been sober. Each time it's pretty much just like a phone call away. I call someone and I tell on myself. That's really what has worked for me like so far. I don't really have too much else. I appreciate, I'm glad more people showed up. That's cool. So I'm going to pass it to Elizabeth. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Taylor.
Yep.
Should I?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. I'm Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I'm really nervous. Now there are more people. There's only four people in here before. I'm a nerd, so I'm going to read something out of the 12 and 12 that pertains to this panel, and then I'm going to sleep. It is a tremendous satisfaction to record that in following years this changed. Alcoholics who still had their health, their families, their jobs, and even two cars in the garage began to recognize their alcoholism. As this trend grew, they were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared the last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had gone through. Since step one requires an admission that our lives had become unmanageable, how could people such as these take this step? I got sober August 27th, 2008, so I just celebrated 6 years. I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 15, and I had my last drink of alcohol when I was 20. When I got sober, I didn't want to get sober. I did not think I was an alcoholic. No offense to you men. I thought alcoholics were men who wore trench coats and drank out of a paper bag. I can tell you wholeheartedly, I am not a man. I never drink alcohol out of a paper bag, and I've never worn a trench coat before. You know, getting sober at 20, It was one of those things where I didn't have a choice in the matter. I was actually forced into going into a treatment center by a judge. I was not under the impression that I was an alcoholic, and I did not think that I had alcoholic tendencies. I know today that I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. I know that it is a progressive, fatal, and chronic disease, meaning that I will die from it if I don't take care of myself. It will get worse if I don't take care of myself, and it will continue to get worse for the rest of my life. I understand now that the way the disease works in me is a three-part process. I have a physical allergy to alcohol, I have a spiritual malady, and the way that my mind works in reality is pretty fucked up. When I was introduced to the 12 steps of AA, I was around 4 months sober. I thought my parents had sent me to a Bible camp. I thought they wanted me to be saved. When Teresa was talking and saying, look at the similarities and not the differences, I looked at every difference that I could to try and separate myself from you. It did not matter. If you did this and I didn't do it, that was the reason why I wasn't an alcoholic. If you did that and I didn't do it, that was the reason that I wasn't an alcoholic. The fact that I was 20 years old and I hadn't lived, you know, my sponsor, she's in her 50s and she always tells me, like what it says in the 12 and 12, that I didn't have to suffer the next 10 or 15 years of hell that she had to prior to getting sober, and that I should be grateful about that, is something that I hold to myself, like hold dear to myself. And when it says a potential alcoholic, I was not a daily drinker. I had bouts of where I would not drink or put something of another form into my body. But within a 2-year span, I've been to mental institutions, I've been arrested, I've tried to commit suicide. Everything it talks about in the big book, I faced within the time between 18 and 20. When she was talking about you didn't know that there was abuse, that you didn't know that you had low self-esteem, that you didn't know how to love yourself, I drank, which, because I liked the effect produced by alcohol, and then it became something that I needed to do in order to take care of myself, and I basically used drinking as a survival skill. Within 6 months between my 19th and 20th birthday, I was to the point where I had spent over $50,000 saved up. You know, when they talk about demoralization, when they talk about that, you know, you're not capable of really understanding, you know, how low your bottom is, you know, I always think back to a time where I was coming to and I was so inebriated that I had other people putting their hands down my throat because they had taken me to the hospital too many times and I was trying to overdose. I think about the fact that I took my mother's engagement ring to a pawn shop and handed it over to someone and they gave me $20. And within the time span of handing it over, I felt guilty. But the minute that something went into my body, it made me feel okay and I didn't care. When you put drugs or alcohol in my body, I did not care and I needed them to survive. When I got sober, I did not want to be sober. I did not want to work the 12 steps. I fought it for a very long time. And this is a story I always share. And it's probably not like other, you know, it's my story. It's my experience. I was 9 months sober and I was at a treatment center. And I have a tendency to run away. While figuratively and literally, I enjoy it. My nickname in high school was Runaway Rosati, and it followed me into my treatment center because I ran away from there about 5 or 6 times. When you took the alcohol away from me, my coping skill was to run away. If I didn't want to be in this room, I would leave. If I didn't want to talk to you, I would physically remove myself and not deal with it. I told you all to fuck off and I ran away. I was in a Greyhound station in downtown Phoenix at 2 a.m. in the morning. And maybe some of you have done that, but I'm going to be very honest. For me, that is not like a cool place to hang out. I don't make friends that easily with Greyhound station people at 2 a.m. in the morning. I don't, you know, I'm a very awkward human being and they probably thought I had Tourette's or something because I didn't really know what I was doing. But a man handed me a Greyhound ticket to Las Vegas and he said, here's a Greyhound ticket, you can have it. And I looked at that Greyhound ticket and I looked around where I was, and at this point I was 21 years old, I had turned 21 in treatment, and I realized that everything they had been telling me about how my mind worked was true. Here I am, I have no money, my family wants nothing to do with me, I have no friends, I got kicked out of college, I've been arrested, if I go back to the state of California I will go to jail, and I'm in a Greyhound station in Phoenix. Ironically, every time I ran away, I was always dressed really nice and I had a big suitcase. And at that moment, I looked at myself and I realized that, you know, I hadn't put alcohol in my body for 9 months, yet here's where my life was. And that to me is the definition of unmanageability. Like, I had nowhere to go. I had nothing to do. I had no one to support me. Like, I had no love for myself. When I first got sober, like, leading up to that, I was incapable of looking myself in the, I can't really look at any of you right now, I'm kind of looking at the ground. Incapable of looking myself in the eyes in the mirror. I would get ready with the light turned off in the mirror because I did not want to look at myself. I hated myself so much that I wanted to die. You know, when you're 18, 19 years old and you end up in a psych ward because you're trying to slit your wrists or swallow a bunch of pills, that's not normal. That's not something that every 18, you know, it's not like a growing pain that you go through. It's not like going through puberty, like, oh, let's slit our wrists. Like, that's part of life. You know, that's not something that's supposed to happen. And when I finally realized that my life was unmanageable and that alcohol was a symptom and that everything they had been telling me was true, I made a phone call in and I ended up going back to that treatment center where, I mean, and that's not to say that I was like all gung-ho about AA after that, because I wasn't. I still tried to get out of it again, but I realized that I was an alcoholic. I realized that the way my mind worked was not normal. I realized that in order for my life to change, whether I had alcohol in my system or not, maybe I should try something I'd never tried before. And I tried the steps. You know, I had a step one. They say the step one is the only step you have to do 100%, and I truly believe that. The next step for me was to create and nurture and develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. That was something that was very hard for me, and I started out there was a woman, I started out with a piece of paper, and I wrote down characteristics of something that I had trust in, that's something I loved, that's something I could give myself over to, and it was a piece of white paper, and I looked at it every day, and I talked to it, and that grew and involved into me looking at fire as my higher power, and that grew and involved into me looking at nature, and Mother Nature, and the universe, and love, and stars, and everything about it as my higher power. And as I slowly started working the steps, I slowly started to feel better. I slowly started to develop this relationship with myself, and then I developed a relationship with my higher power.
Doing great. Doing awesome.
Yeah. And so at this point in my life, I mean, I'll be honest, I said this the other day, growing up in AA and growing up and getting sober young, you know, you want it to be graceful, you want to look good, and you don't. You just don't. It just does not. I'm a clumsy person, but I'm just saying this right now. I have tripped over myself figuratively, literally, emotionally. Life still happens and things still happen regardless of whether I chose to put the drink down and I chose to do work on myself. At this point in my life, I believe the two most important relationships are with myself and with my higher power. I believe that working the steps, I believe, through working the step, my legs are really sweaty. I believe that working the steps helped me develop this relationship with myself and also helped me develop a relationship with my higher power. And it says, our only defense against the first drink is a relationship with your higher power. And that's the point of doing the steps, is to help you develop a relationship with your higher power and with yourself. I'm incredibly grateful and I love the life I have today, and that doesn't mean that things don't happen. That doesn't mean most of my friends have relapsed. Someone very close to me died last year at the age of 23 from alcoholism. I've been fired from jobs. I've gotten new jobs. I've had horrible experiences of jobs. I've been in some not pretty relationships with people, and I have not showed up accordingly. I've lost friends, I've gained friends, I've gone back to school, I've developed a relationship with my parents. I don't really have a relationship with my sister. I've gone through all of these things, and all it's done is helped me grow into the person I am today. And the thing about, you know, not being graceful is, when I look at an alcoholic and they stand up and they say, my life is perfect and I did everything great, I'm like, fuck you. Like, really? Because I did not do it that well. I have to continue to work on myself on a daily basis. And that doesn't mean that I want to. And that doesn't mean that my sponsee was sitting with me and she's like, you know, I'm not really excited about doing step work. I don't have the thought to myself, like, hey, let's go look at myself and, like, feel all these feelings. I was like, I don't think anyone does. It's not about that. It's about actually doing it. It's about seeing the results that happen. It's about understanding that the way my life is today is in no compare. Like, I am able to look myself in the mirror and be like, you might not be perfect, you have flaws, you have to work on yourself, but that is okay because you are sober today and you have the opportunity to have a life worth living. I have the opportunity to have a life worth living, and I'm truly grateful that I got it at a young age. And you know what? Like she said today, there's only 24 hours. Right now, in this moment, I know that I'm doing something for my sobriety. I'm sitting here in a group with a bunch of alcoholics, and with that, I'll pass.
My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
I don't even know if this thing's actually working, darling. Oh, I guess it is. It's working. What I want to do is I want to dance really bad. I love dancing. fine. Just run away. Just run away. It's fine. I'm gonna be like 5 minutes and you just run off. That's okay. I learned that from Clancy.
Sorry.
He does that all day long. Anybody know who Clancy is?
Yep,
okay. Excellent. So, let's see. Real simple. Just like everybody else who spoke tonight, it's been already an emotional roller coaster of hearing stories, so mine's pretty much the same. You know, if we close our eyes and we, like, think about what's happening on the other side of the wall, it sounds like there's a huge party and a bunch of people are just getting down, doesn't it? It does. That's like, I see it in my head. All right, real simple. Let's see. I grew up Jehovah's Witness with my folks. My dad and stepmom is who I lived with, and they had like a trillion freaking kids. There were six of us growing up at that point. And I was in the middle. Dad was abusive in every weird way you could think of, and I got the brunt of it because I have a mouth. This mouth was there then, and it's still here now. And it was quick and fast, and it just got me in trouble all the time. Lies came out quicker than the truth. I don't know why, it's just what I did. Did you do that? No, I didn't. Boom. Took me to 11 years old. They said, hey, do you want to move over with your mom and stepdad? I was like, yeah. I hated my dad. I thought about killing him on a daily basis, like how I was going to do that, what I was going to do. It was knife to chest while he was sleeping. And because he tormented my soul is how it felt. And I moved over to mom's house. Within a year, I was having the cops chase me. Mom and stepdad hold me down, beat me because they didn't know what to do with me. And then between that age and, so my first drink was probably was around 12 and a half. Between that age and 17, I had been expelled from every school I had been to, which is 9 different schools. I got to 6th grade. And then they just pushed me through. It just kept pushing me through. And I'd have a week in school, but every single school, even the bad schools, like the kids, you know, you go to the, I'd get kicked out of. And you talked about running away. Ran away. Ran away. Ran away. I constantly ran away. And by the time I was 17, I was getting convicted of 7 felonies and 16 misdemeanors because they just kept stacking up, you know. And I learned for a while that if I did certain things, people liked me. You know, and I fit where I never fit. I was the oddball out. I didn't fit. And I hated myself. And if I was alone, I was okay. But when I tried to fit in with anybody anywhere, I couldn't. And when I used drugs or alcohol, something happened for me when I was with people. And I became kind of a part of all of a sudden. And I thought, if I use drugs and alcohol every single day, I'll be fine. Like I was like, I think it was like 14 or 13. I'll be fine. So I did that. And by the time I was 17, I'm sitting there with all these felonies because I just couldn't sit still either. I was so out of my skin, you know, even with the drugs and alcohol, I just couldn't sit still. So I would go and I had no boundaries. I'd go and I'd steal a car. We'd break in houses. I'd get in fights in schools that I didn't go to. And I just was doing running, you know, whatever I thought I needed to do to fit and be a part of some sort of life. It just made sense to me to live that way. So I did. I got waved over to adult court. That walk between children's court and adult court was shackled, chained, full thing, walking over. Something changed inside of me at that moment. And I thought, I can live different. I want to live different. I don't know how I'm going to live different. I don't know what that looks like. But I saw people throughout life who had tried to help me. And maybe I could do it. I went to jail for 2 years. While I was in jail, I went to AA meetings. I started working the steps. When I got out, I did the same thing. I went to meetings. It took a long time. And just like what you were saying, getting sober young was, just means that I had very little life skills. And, it's alright. I had very little life skills. And the funny thing is I did not like young people's stuff. I hated it. And I was so uptight because I wanted to be perfect in life. I wanted to do everything exactly one way. This is the way you gotta do it. And I just strived so hard for, I'd say between the 5 to 10 years, my first 5 to 10, I was just like an anal asshole. Like inside. I don't think I showed it too much, but it wouldn't get real close to me. Because I wouldn't let anybody close. And it just took a long time for me to see what you were just saying, which is that I'm human. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes. I'm going to make a lot of faults. But I can stay sober, just like everybody else has said. And so here I sit. I'm 20 years sober now this year. And I'm happy to be alive. You know, I'm happy to be alive. And I'm so consistently grateful, like, that I get to share that with people and that they let me share their life too. You know? That's freaking amazing. So, that just consistently blows me away. And she talked about love and all the good things that come with life. It doesn't matter if I don't have a pot to piss in. It's true. If I have a host of friends that love me, it couldn't get better. You know, it couldn't get better. And I feel that so much these days. Anyway, that's all I really got. Thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thanks, Peter.
We've reached the end of the meeting. If you could all help me close with the responsibility
for no questions.
Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Questions?
I was just saying, you don't have to ask.
Good.
I really appreciate you guys for showing up and doing this. I know it's not a question. I just...
Wow. Schooled that one. Zip it.
Just thank you. It's only doing this for being here. Appreciate it.
We appreciate the meeting. Can I be close with...
Any more questions?
Any more questions? Anyone?
Responsibility
player. Do you have a question?
Do you have a question?
Do you?
Yeah.
Why'd you move seats? Yeah. Should we redo it?
Do you have a question for him?
Yeah, let's run it back. Why did you find your higher power? What is that?
Question, JP. I mean, like I was saying, well, you weren't here, but... I was not taking a shot at you, I swear.
Uh-huh.
What happened, though, is when I wanted to get sober, finally, I talked to some guys that I had been through New Freedom with for that month that I had been here before, and one guy in particular was, like, he was crazy. Like, he was insane. Like, we would do, like, all sorts of shady shit together. He was nuts. And then he was one of the guys that they told me to call. So when I called him, it just sounded like a totally different guy, like, on the other side of the phone. And he basically told me, you know, what he did and what he was continuing to do. And I was told that all I had to do for step two was basically be willing to believe that this person has a higher power and that it's working for them and maybe it could happen for me. That's literally like where it came from. I couldn't give you a whole bunch of details or anything about my higher power. I just know what it is, you know what I'm saying? Thanks for the question, JP.